Stay tuned for a Juno Afternoon. We'll be talking with Rebecca Souza about this Friday's Lego Corporate Challenge. Kim and Norm Haskell will be here to give us an update on a fundraiser to purchase a service dog for a local resident. Youth Improv class, that's coming up too. And we'll learn about this Friday's Poetry Slam at Perseverance Theater. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music and more. That's next on Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Leaders of the Flandreau Santee Sioux Tribe have approved an ordinance to legalize marijuana on the reservation for medicinal and recreational use. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Keely Bultina has more.
The Flandreau Santee Sioux Executive Board is making marijuana a tribal business. President Tony Reeder says leaders are working to create a secure environment to cultivate the crop.
Our plan is to have a grow facility on reservation that will create 10 to 12 jobs, and then we're going to have a facility that will be used for consumption and sale of marijuana. We're only going to sell in amounts of a gram or less as to prevent people from taking marijuana out of the facility and leaving the reservation with it. Consumption will only be allowed and legalized within the boundary of that facility as well.
Reeder says people who are 21 years of age or older with an ID can purchase marijuana. If a doctor has prescribed medical marijuana, anyone can use the drug. Reeder says the tribe has potential to generate revenue to support its people.
We've needed a treatment facility on the reservation for several years, not just for marijuana. We're looking for prescription meds, other drugs, and as well as alcohol and tobacco. And we've got housing needs. We've got several different needs that, you know, we're hoping to be able to take care of by taking advantage of this economic opportunity.
The president says the facility will welcome both Native Americans and people who are not tribal members. Reeder says the Flandreau Santee Sioux's marijuana facilities should have product for sale by the end of the year. I'm Keely Bultina.
Montana's governor is launching an effort to address health care needs among Native Americans in the state. Montana Public Radio's Steve Jess reports.
Governor Steve Bullock Tuesday capped a two-day summit meeting with leaders of Montana's eight tribal nations by signing an executive order creating a new Office of American Indian Health, tasked with bringing state, tribal, and federal officials together to ensure that the state's native and non-native residents have the same access to essential health services.
Too many families are losing entire generations, and with them we lose essential wisdom and expertise and experience.
At his side for the ceremony was Kevin Howlett, health director for the Confederated Kootenai and Salish tribes. Howlett says this is just the beginning of a long process.
What we want to do is set the table. We want to bring the parties to the table, and we want to have a discussion about what the problems are and what some probable solutions might be.
Montana tribal leaders last year pressed officials to overhaul the federal health care system for Native Americans, citing a shortage of trained medical personnel and misdiagnosed illnesses among problems they've experienced. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jess in Helena, Montana.
New York State has granted jurisdiction over a contested area to the St. Regis Mohawk Tribe. David Summerstein with North Country Public Radio has details.
The 2,000 acres just south of the Akwesasne Mohawk Reservation in northern New York is home to mostly Mohawk families, and the tribe has been fighting for decades to make it part of Mohawk territory. Tribal Chief Ron LaFrance says for years, New York State Police has largely ignored the area.
They don't patrol there regularly. When there are moments of crisis, it takes them anywhere from an hour to an hour and 45 minutes to arrive. So we were very concerned about the public safety and the perception that, you know, our police couldn't even patrol in our own community.
A bill passed in New York's legislature Monday now resolves that problem. It gives tribal police jurisdiction to patrol the Hogansburg Triangle. In 2012, a judge sustained the legitimacy of the Mohawks' lawsuit that New York took the triangle illegally in the 18th century. The tribe has been in serious talks with the state to reacquire the land for more than a year. I'm David Summerstein in Canton, New York.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support provided by the National Indian Education Association's 46th Annual Convention and Trade Show in Portland, Oregon, October 14 through 17. All participants, vendors, and exhibitors welcome to register at niea.org. Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians. Colon cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death in American Indians 50 and over. For yourself, your family, and our community, get screened. Info at AmericanIndianCancer.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome to Juneau Afternoon. So glad you could join us. I'm Lori Scandling with producer Jeff Brown here in our studio. Let's take a quick look at the weather. It will be mostly cloudy with scattered and isolated showers. Between now and it looks like probably Friday during the day, by Friday night, we have an improvement to mostly cloudy, and Saturday through Sunday, partly cloudy, which in my mind is always partly sunny. Highs will jump up to around 68 over the weekend, so we have some nice days to look forward to. Our first guest this afternoon is Becca Souza. She is the STEM, which is the Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math Program Manager for the Juneau Economic Development Council, and we're talking about the LEGO Corporate Challenge. I guess I need to ask about all three of those words, LEGO Corporate Challenge. What do you mean by LEGO Challenge, how is it corporate?
I have even more acronyms to throw in there, too. It's actually the first LEGO League Corporate Challenge. We want to make the names as long as we possibly can. And First LEGO League is a program that we run. It's a statewide robotics league for kids ages 8 through 14, and in grades 4 through 8. And they have to build and program a LEGO robot, so made out of the same LEGO bricks that we played with as kids, but they're kind of modernized, and now there's an actual brick that's a brain of a robot that they can program using their computer to do all kinds of things. And they're learning those same skills that the NASA scientists that programmed the Mars rover needed to get that done. So we have kids in Juneau that are working on problems like this, and the corporate challenge is a chance for the adults in Juneau to get in on the fun. We have found over the years of doing the program that we have a really hard time finding coaches and mentors. Robotics isn't quite like forming a basketball team where you have all these teachers and adults that grew up playing basketball and have been through 1,000 practices and can hop in and run them. I don't know anybody who's a teacher now that was on a first LEGO League team and had experienced the practice before we brought the program here. So this is kind of our way of giving them a chance to experience it firsthand so that they can be a little more informed as coaches in the fall.
So you say that kids have been working on these challenges. How did that start, and how long have the kids been working on it, meaning this year? Was it just after-school program?
It's really mixed. So FIRST is the overall program. It stands for Inspiration and Recognition of Science and Technology. And it's a global program that's trying to get kids excited about STEM fields and topics and trying to get our culture more enthusiastic about that, too. We brought the program here to Juneau back, I think our first LEGO League tournament was in 2007. And each year, teams form. They can be after school. We have a great program with the Girl Scouts that have teams. Sometimes it's just a community that a group of friends get together and say, hey, we want to do this. We want to have our own little team. And then there's a couple teachers that have been able to run it as part of a class. They meet from September through December. And then we have a big tournament, like any other sports tournament, at Centennial Hall. This year's will be on December 13th, I believe it is, that second Saturday in December. We bring in kids all from all over Southeast to come in and compete for the day and share what they've done.
So is the event this Friday at the Baranoff, is that for adults only, or do some of these kids who have had a real leg up, no pun intended, have a chance to compete as well?
So we don't let kids compete, but we let kids coach.
Oh,
so there will be
great
kids there.
Role reversal there.
And the adults need the help. They are notorious for doing a much poorer job with their scores than the kids do in the fall. And this is the same challenge that the kids took on last fall. So it really is helpful to have kids come in. I was at, my husband is actually on one of these teams, and they had practice at our house last night. And I'll admit that there was a student there helping them a lot with building their robot.
And that was appropriate?
It was. In this case, I let it slide. You know, he's got a little extra pull.
So this is not an ad hoc open competition where if you're interested, just show up and someone will hand you a bag of Legos. These are teams that have formed amongst adults somewhat in advance, and we will see their competing performances Friday.
Right. So these teams have been practicing not very long. We'll give them less than a month to get their robot kits and practice. But the cool thing about Friday's event is that that is open to everyone. We really encourage people to just come out. It's a really fun, quick event, 2 hours, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Baranoff. It's family friendly, so the bar is open, and we encourage the adults to have fun in a way that they can't at the event in December. You can grab a beer, grab a drink. Come in. Andy Klein is going to be emceeing, which is one of my favorite parts of the event. The humor with the emceeing is a little bit more geared toward adults than the December competition is, but it's a great chance for kids to come out and see what's going on also.
So, Becca, will the actual competitors be those who have already been practicing on the challenge on a team, but you're saying it's open to anyone who wants to watch the fun?
Yeah, and it's stress-free to be one of those spectators that just shows up on Friday night. You don't have to worry. We're not going to grill you about robotics. It's just a good time to come out and watch.
Now, when it's called a corporate challenge, what does that imply? The company is sponsoring this?
Right. This is a fundraiser for us. It's not a huge fundraiser, but it is a chance for local companies. We have ETS, state government, who has a team, and those are professional programmers that are getting together to do this. RDI, Resource Data Inc., has sponsored a team, I think, since our first one. And again, we've got professional programmers that are getting a chance to see how the program works and then be involved with our teams and mentor in the fall. And I'm looking down. Then we just have coaches, can't say no, but it's Integrity Real Estate is another sponsor of the program and a great source of volunteers, including our Girl Scout team coach who's been doing this again since the program started in Juneau.
In your experience with this, and you've been with the program in Juneau since the beginning, what typically does a robot do? Meaning the package that you get, you said, has a chip that can do robotic brain type things. Can it do a variety of things? Or is there just a narrow range of choices that this brain in your package can do? What do you typically witness out there?
In this, it's a lot of the robot pushing something forward, lifting things up, turning. But what you can get into with the programming is moving towards artificial intelligence, actually getting the robot to make informed decisions based on what it's reading on the field or environment. It's a precursor to the kinds of things that roboticist programmers are doing when they get into the DARPA challenge, when they're looking at having a vehicle be able to travel autonomously. So where you've pre-programmed it to go out into an environment where you can't necessarily predict what it's going to do, but it has sensors and the ability to read the environment around it and make decisions. You won't see that on Friday. You'll see a robot moving forward across a 4-foot by 8-foot field to complete small obstacles, small missions.
And this 4-by-8 field, I'm envisioning something like a boxing ring, meaning the audience stands around the center, around the perimeter of the center. How will that work?
It's exactly what it is. You stand around the field and you watch the participants can start their robot in one corner, and they run different programs, and then the robot has to be able to autonomously on its own go out and complete different missions. It comes back, and then maybe they switch an attachment, put on a different motor, send it out again. And they only have 2.5 minutes to complete as many of these 15 missions as possible.
Oh, my gosh. So when they're making a pit stop, it's like the Indianapolis 500. It's done within 5 seconds.
You'll see sweat and shaky hands. There might be some quiet language choices on the side when things go badly.
Now, is there a prize?
There is a beautiful Lego trophy. They get their name engraved on the trophy plaque, and they get that trophy for 1 year.
I'm picturing it right now. It's got to be made of Legos.
It is completely made of Legos, every last bit of it, and it's It's gorgeous. It is a good prize to put on your desk at work for bragging rights for 1 year.
And certainly a conversation starter.
Yes.
Now, what would it cost an observer to come in and watch Friday night's action at the Baranoff?
Observing is completely free of charge.
Oh, you mentioned a fundraiser, so I thought perhaps this was part of the plan.
You know, we've thought about doing that, but a big part of this is trying to change the culture and trying to get people really excited about celebrating math and science technology in this way. So we want it to be a chance for people to come and celebrate. We want anybody on the street to be able to come in and be a part of that.
Well, it sounds like a fun and unusual way to spend a Friday evening. We're talking with Becca Sosa of the Juneau Economic Development Council about an event that's set between 6 and 8 p.m. this coming Friday at the Baranoff. And it is the first LEGO Corporate Challenge. And FIRST is an acronym intended to get folks in our community interested in math and science and to perhaps become a coach or mentor of a robotics team that is student-centered this fall. So you'll see teams compete Friday night, and the machine, I don't know what else to call it.
It's a robot.
The robot has certain tasks to do. Is there any information you'd like to share further, Rebecca?
Yeah, if you go to our website, stemak.org, there'll be a link that can take you to the corporate challenge. Also, our Facebook page will be posting photos from the event, and it's FIRST in Alaska is where you find us on Facebook. And that's also a great place if you can't make it this Friday, but you're interested in the robotics program and being involved in FIRST LEGO League, FIRST Tech Challenge, which is our high school program. There's information on stemak.org, and you can also call me 523-2334. And I am happy to talk to folks about building up the program for the fall and how to get your student on a team if you're interested.
Remind us what FIRST, F-I-R-S-T, stands for.
For Inspiration and Recognition of Science and Technology.
And that's exactly what you're doing. Thank you, Becca, for telling us about the LEGO Challenge this Friday night.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 17th of June, 2015. It was on this day, 1631, Mumtaz Mahal died, and her husband, the Emperor Shah Jahan, was so grieved he spent the next 22 years building her mausoleum, the Taj Mahal, in Agra. She was his favorite. Of his three wives, she died giving birth to their 14th child. More than 20,000 workers were employed building the mausoleum, including the tomb built of white marble inlaid with semi-precious stones, which has suffered greatly in recent years from the pollution of nearby foundries and automobile traffic. It was on this day in 1901 that the first standardized tests were administered by the College Board for college admission. Before the standardized test came along, many universities had their own college entrance exams, but the number of college students had grown rapidly between 1890 and 1900, and the founders of the College Board thought having a standardized test would help to simplify curricula at the high school level and make a college education accessible to a wider pool of applicants. And so the tests were given. They were tested in English, French, German, Latin, Greek, history, mathematics, chemistry, and physics. And the tests were essays. They were not multiple choice. So the first college boards were achievement tests. They tested students' proficiency in certain subjects. And a couple of decades later, the college board switched over to aptitude tests intended to measure intelligence, just in case your high school did not teach ancient Greek. But one motive for the aptitude tests was to limit the influx of immigrants and particularly Eastern European Jews to the student bodies of Ivy League schools. A dean at Columbia University thought the high numbers of recent immigrants and their children would make the school, quote, socially uninviting to students who come from homes of refinement.
These college officials believed that immigrants had less innate intelligence than old-blood Americans and would score lower on aptitude tests, which would give the schools an excuse to admit fewer of them. But it simply turned out not to be true. In any case, the new aptitude tests were known as the Scholastic Aptitude Test, the SAT, and the first was given in 1926. Here's a poem for today by Philip Terman, The Summer You Read Proust. Remember the summer you read Proust? In the hammock, tied to the apple trees, your daughters climbed, their shadows merging with the shadows of the leaves, spilling onto those long, arduous sentences. All afternoon and into the evening, robins, jays, the distant dog, the occasional swaying, the way the hours rocked back and forth, that gigantic book holding you in its woven nest. You couldn't get enough pages. You wished that with every turning a thousand were added, the words falling you into sleep, the sleep waking you into words, the summer you read Proust, which lasted the rest of your life. A poem by Philip Terman, The Summer You Read Proust, from Our Portion, published by Autumn House Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by LegalZoom, providing legal solutions for business owners, including corporate filings and legal plans, featuring attorney contract review and tax advice. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
Masters of Public Administration at the University of Alaska Southeast comes to you where you live and work in Alaska. Online classes combine the structure of the classroom with the accessibility of an e-learning program. Get an interactive, supportive, and high-quality education. Learn more at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by University of Alaska Southeast School of Management.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Lori Scandling here. My guest in the studio with us this afternoon is Norm Haskell, and he is half of a couple, Norm and Kim Haskell, who are working hard to raise money to purchase a service dog for Kim. If I understand correctly, Kim is in a wheelchair. Is that right, Norm?
Yeah, she's in a wheelchair part of the time. We're used as a cane.
Mm-hmm.
When we go out, she's in a wheelchair.
Great. Well, we appreciate your being able to come today. And I know that there's an event this Saturday, an arts and crafts fair at the Nugget Mall from 10 to 4, and that the mall management is facilitating the fair in order to provide the rentals of the space for vendors to your fundraising effort. So tell us a little bit about that event and some of the other events and methods that you've been using to help raise money to purchase a service animal.
Okay, well, first of all, on Saturday is the Art and Craft Fair at the Nugget Mall, and it's going to be from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and we still have room for more vendors if anybody's interested, and they can and contact the mall about the information on that.
What is the rental for the space, Norm?
The space is $20
for
an 8x8 space.
Pretty spacious.
And also you can rent a table and two chairs, and also electricity is extra.
Okay, very good. What else have you and Kim been doing to help raise the funds needed?
Well, we did a spaghetti dinner at the Moose Lodge about a month or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
We raised a little bit of money for that, and we've been doing some other craft fairs ourselves. Crafts that Kim has made. And then we have donation cans at five locations in Juneau that we are collecting on. We collect those on a weekly basis.
Mm-hmm.
Where are those cans?
Those cans went out. There's one at the Gastineau Humane Society, the Dear Hearts store, McGivney's, Duck Creek Market, and Gonzo's restaurant on formerly the Waffle Company.
Waffle House.
And it says, I think that was five, right?
It was. Yeah. You're right. What's your goal for fundraising?
We would like to make about $30,000. It's quite expensive obtaining a service dog. The money also includes travel to and from. Sometimes you could take numerous trips to meet the dog, to be trained with the dog as well.
How does one go about securing a service dog? I wouldn't even know where to begin that process.
Well, there's a number of different agencies throughout the country. You just have to kind of find one and hope you'll find one that's reputable. And there is a national registry of service dogs. And that's how we located one. We have, I believe it's three that we have applications in with right now. And are working to obtain a service dog through them.
Is there any public assistance or insurance programs that provide help to get a service animal?
Insurance does not pay for any of it. There's really no... some of the local businesses, we had actually received a grant from SAHL to help us with it. But as far as other services in the community, it's just been... the people coming in and helping, donating through the cans and going to our fundraisers.
So it's dollar by dollar.
Yes, it is.
How's the process going?
It's going okay. We're not making money as fast as we'd like to, but we're getting there, and we'd like to say every dollar counts, and it's adding up.
Tell me a little bit about how Kim will use the dog.
Okay, Kim will use the dog mainly for mobility. To help her when she's standing, it'll give some support. And when she's walking, it helps you kind of help her to maintain her balance so that she doesn't fall.
And tell me a little bit about Kim's mobility issues. Is this new or something developed in adulthood?
Was it developed in adulthood? She has diabetes, so she has neuropathy in her feet and hands. And on top of that, she also has arthritis in her knees and her hips and her hands. Which means with the hands, she's dropping things and it's difficult for her to bend over. She also has congestive heart failure. And so walking, that helps make walking difficult as well. So when we go out, generally she's in a wheelchair just because she can't walk long distances. And also because of the pain and she's not real steady on her feet.
So when I think of service animals, I think of animals who primarily assist those who are sight impaired. Do they train service animals then for a variety of tasks? It sounds like your wife could use assistance, say, retrieving items or being able to cross the street safely, that sort of thing. Tell me a little bit about what you know about that.
Right. That's one of the main functions is retrieving things, items that she dropped. Being diabetic, if she was to have a low blood sugar, we train the dog to go and retrieve her bag, which would have something in it that she could take to help raise her blood sugar. If she was to fall, it would be trained to go get help. If she was in the bathroom, she fell, it would go to get somebody to come and help. It also helps with their mobility, with the walking. They have special harnesses made for these dogs that use the harness and kind of use the dog like a cane, but it takes the weight off. It distributes the weight evenly so it doesn't harm the dog.
I think I've seen those. They're rigid harnesses that go around the dog's back that rise up and that you can hang on to
exactly.
I'm thinking of that correctly.
Right.
So, Norm, you mentioned the Arts and Crafts Fair this weekend at the Nugget Mall on Saturday specifically, and that you and Kim have produced your own crafts to sell. Can you tell us what those are?
Well, we've done a number of things. We've done take the mason jars and with pre-mixed cookie mixes and and things like that, soups and stuff, and all we all have to do is add the liquid.
Mm-hmm.
Kim is currently working on making table coasters to display. We've made reconditioned picture frames for chalkboards or also for clipboards where you can hang objects on them to, you know, either in your office or in your kitchen or something like that.
You mentioned that there's a National Registry of Service Animals. Is there a waiting list then?
Some programs can take up to 4 years. So it just depends if once you get accepted by a program, if they have a service dog that meets your needs. Some programs, they start you off with a puppy. So it's not to 2 years old where they actually start the service training. So if you contact an agency, they have a service dog that is ready to be trained, and then you start training at that time.
Do you anticipate receiving a fully trained dog or training it from infancy?
We're not sure. Ideally, it would be to get a fully trained dog.
Mm-hmm. Norm, if somebody's listening now who is interested in knowing more about the work that you and Kim are doing to raise these funds, and would like to chat with you about that, what's the best way for them to contact you or Kim?
Probably would be, I gotta give you my email address.
Sure.
Which is nhask@sbcglobal.net. And then I also have my cell phone number, which is 517-740-1937. And the home number is 907-523-1911.
Well, thank you for sharing that information with us today, Norm. We appreciate it. Norm Haskell is here talking about an arts and crafts fair at the Nugget Mall. The rental for the space by each vendor will be forwarded to the Haskells as a donation in their effort to raise funds to secure a service dog for Kim, who uses a wheelchair. You can also find donation cans at the Humane Society, DeHart's, Duck Creek, McGivney's, and Gonzo's. If you'd like to reach the Haskells, you can find them at a local phone number here, 523-1911, or through Norm's email. That's nhask, for Norm Haskell, nhask@sbcglobal.net. Thanks for joining us, Norm. We wish you well on your
effort. Well, thank you.
If those dogs could talk, we'd know just how they feel and how much they like to walk and appreciate a meal. And they would say,
what do you think I think about when you're away all day? Well, I'm making lists of things that I would like to say.
Why are the only balls I have the ones that you throw? And when you go away all day, you never even phone. I don't want an old milk bone, I want a chicken of my own. Two cats in every pot, that's not asking for a lot. If those dogs could talk, it would be the best of tricks. We'd surely take more walks, and we'd throw a lot more sticks. And they would say,
I think you need a bath. It occurs to me you shed. I'll be glad to shake your hand if you play dead instead.
I want to make more friends, pedigrees and mutts. I know my doggone rights, and I want to sniff more butts. Please don't make me beg, I need the car tonight. I got a date in heat, and there's a big dog fight. If those
dogs could talk, we'd find out pretty soon who's barking up a tree and who's howling at the moon. And they would say,
I want a fire hydrant installed in our home. If you are my best friend, then you'll shower me with bones and let me chew and roll on something dead that I've found and lick your face so you will know that I'm your faithful hound.
Thanks for joining us on a Juno afternoon. Lori Scandling here with our producer, Jeff Brown, in the studio. Taking a quick look at weather, it will be mostly cloudy with isolated showers through Friday, and things clear up a bit for the weekend, improving to partly cloudy with highs close to 70 starting on Saturday. Our next interview is with a long-distance guest, that's Mike McLaren, and we're going to be chatting with him at his home near Chicago, and he's going to be talking to us about a youth improv class, which will be happening in July. July's not that far away. Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm well, Lori. How are you?
Great. Glad to have you aboard here. Tell us a little bit about the class that will be offered in Juneau and how you came to offer it.
Sure. So it's a basic improv course. What that means is that we're going to teach you the basics of improv, you know, some rules, and then everybody's just going to have fun. We're going to play all these different games. It's almost like the Whose Line Is It Anyway program, a lot of the same kind of things. I like to think of it as sort of Mad Libs that you get to act out, and it can be really fun for everybody involved. And how did I get to the point where I'm teaching it? I've been doing improv myself for the past 15 or so years. On all different kinds of places and different stages, different styles of improvisation, I wouldn't know where to start.
Well, how did you get started then? Tell us about your initial interest and what sparked that. Perhaps someone listening will know a young person who may be experiencing the same excitement about the improv world.
You know, I saw the television program Whose Line Is It Anyway as a kid, and I always loved it. I thought it was so much fun. But I never really thought it was something that I could do. You know, I didn't know how people got to the point where they were able to do that and able to have that kind of fun and even, you know, much less do it in front of an audience and make people laugh. But then when I went away to college at the University of New Hampshire, the first weekend I was there, I saw a show by the college group. And then, you know, several months later they had auditions, and I thought, well, I don't know what I'm doing, but why not go for it? And I went for it, and I didn't make it the first time, but I tried again the next semester, and I did make it. And you know, when you join a team like that, you get to kind of learn the ropes, and slowly but surely I got on stage, and it's just so much fun to be up on stage and to know that you've said something that has made a room of people laugh is tremendous. It's super fun. There's nothing that I can really compare it to.
What's the most important skill to bring to an improv team?
Just willingness to roll with the punches, because you're not going to know what's going to happen next. You're creating the unknown with partners, and so you have to be willing to just kind of let it flow. If things don't go the way you hoped or planned, well, that's improv for you. That's always the way it goes. But the people who are very adaptable and who are just willing to have fun no matter what happens are usually rewarded.
What age group are you targeting with your classes in July? Tell us about that. Is it for kids? Is it for adults? Everybody?
Well, so the classes that are set up now are for kids. I've done this before with middle school kids. I used to teach Spanish at a middle school up in New Hampshire, and that's an after-school program. And the summer program, I did improv courses. So I'm looking at middle school age. I suppose it's a little bit flexible here, depending on the level of interest, but that's primarily what I'm looking for these classes. But I was also talking to Brandon from the Canvas about the possibility of doing maybe a smaller like workshop, 2 or 3 days on a weekend or something like that for adults, because I do perform improv in the city of Chicago, and I do some things that might be more interesting for different tastes, but you know, I don't really know. It all depends on the group of people that are in the course. If they want to do a show of improv, then that's wonderful, but I'm not going to force anything on anyone. You know, people want different things, and I will sort of cater the course to what they find that they're enjoying the most, and we just go in that direction.
So right now you're inviting youth who are ages approximately 11 through 14 to participate in the improv class, which will happen through the Canvas Studio, which is downtown on Seward Street. What's the cost for the class, Mike?
Oh, wow. That's a good question.
I'm not
setting the cost. I suppose you're going to have to talk to Brandon about that.
Okay.
I know that the courses here in Chicago tend to run about $30 a class, like per day of class.
And so how many days?
I'm not quite sure.
Are we looking at a week, 5 days, or what?
We're looking at a 5-day course,
okay.
Yes.
5-day workshop?
Per session, and it's a 5-day workshop. And
okay.
Then, and yeah, so it gets you plenty of contact time with me, the teacher, and you get plenty of chances to do all different kinds of improv, and we see where it goes from there. If people want to do some kind of a performance, I'm totally open to that.
So you live in a city that is renowned for comedy, vis-a-vis the Second City improv,
mm-hmm.
and comedy. I should say, kind of heroes that have come out of that area. Is that why you live there?
That's definitely part of the reason why I live here. I went to graduate school in Ohio, and I wasn't doing improv for about a year or two, and it really felt like something was missing from my life. And I thought, I'm from Boston originally, and I felt like I've come this far. I am more than halfway to Chicago, and I've always been curious about what it's like, what the scene is going on, and yeah, all these heroes here in Chicago. So that is a big part of why I came here. I also, I'm a Spanish teacher, and I got a job that I couldn't refuse. So the two things kind of worked out together, and I've been here studying. I took classes at IO, which is a name that is right up there with Second City. Many of the big heroes that we've heard of, from Chris Farley to Mike Myers, also took courses at IO and performed there, as well as Second City. It's a name that we don't hear as much probably outside Chicago, but it's very big within Chicago.
So, Mike, the takeaway message for me is improv may not be a day job for most people. In other words, hang on to your day job even if you think you're a super improv performer.
Absolutely. You know, some of the best people here are not making tons and tons of money doing it, but they're having fun, and that's all I really care about, is having fun. And I'm hoping to share that with anybody that wants to come and take the class. Come and just have fun for 3 hours a day for 5 days.
What day does the class start, Mike?
Oh, let me look at my calendar. I want to say July 7th. I want to say it's the second. It's the Monday, the 6th of July. The first Monday.
Okay.
Second week.
Monday, July 6th. Terrific. Well, we're talking with Mike McLaren. He's an improv comedy artist living in Chicago. He'll be coming to Juneau in just a couple of weeks to do a 5-day workshop targeting youth ages 11 to 14. It'll be 3 hours a day for 5 days. And if you're an adult like me who's listening and think, improv could be that three-letter word that Mike used about 15 times, fun, do contact Brandon at the Canvas. So if there is a desire for an evening workshop for adults, Brandon can know that. And ask Brandon for additional information, such as the cost of the 5-day workshop and the exact times as well. So if you're a young person out there, or a not-so-young person, the Canvas is the place to get more information about the upcoming improv workshop beginning Monday, July 6th, with Mike McLaren of Chicago. Mike, great talking to you.
Great talking to you, Lori.
Thanks.
This is Bird Note. Watch any backyard bird and you are watching an acrobat at work. A robin zooms across your field of vision and reaching a tree appears to go from full-out flight to a dead stop in the wink of an eye. How come it doesn't crash? Well, there's several things that are happening at once. Just before it lands, the robin raises the angle of its wings higher and higher from the horizontal. This slows it down and reduces lift. And the tail can also be fanned and held down, adding to the drag at the instant before the bird clamps its feet to the perch. And hawks. At high speed, a hawk dives to a bit below where it wants to perch, then pulls into a steep climb, slowing its momentum just in time. While ducks, landing on a pond, use a combination of raised wings and a bit of hydroplaning, like water skiing on their wide, webbed feet. Birds are often admired and envied for possessing the miracle of flight. But breaking just in time, it's a bit of a miracle in itself. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Southeast Alaska Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, and Queer Alliance in celebrating Juno Pride June 12th through the 21st. 10 days of events including Glitz, a drag show and dance starring Detox from RuPaul's Drag Race, a film series, hiking, karaoke, the annual barbecue, and more. It's a great way to show your support for the LGBTQ community. For more information on Juno Pride events, visit SEAGLA.org. That's SEAGLA.org.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Our final segment today is about the Wishkanadei Poetry Slam. Thank you. That's Friday night at Perseverance Theater, and we're talking with Bill Merck and Connor Lindrum about this event. How long has this been going on? Because, Connor, you said, yep, every single month, because I talked about you don't need to register, you can just show up, and he said, yep, that's the way it goes. So tell me a little bit about this, the history of it.
So, yeah, it's the third Friday of every month with, rotating locations. But we're into our fifth year now. We're past, past halfway in our fifth year. The anniversary is on October. And it started as, a hope, a dream of a couple, determined people who were like, we're going to do this. They just called it Juno Poetry Slam before it even had a name. And they were like, we hope people show up. And it was a smash success right away. The community really showed up. And so every month we do it on the third Friday, sign-ups at 6 o'clock. The show starts at 6:30, starts with an open mic, and you can do whatever you want. You can sing a song. You can do a dance. If you can sew a dress in 3 minutes, then do that. We're open for everything. And then after that is a competition where there's three rounds, and the poets compete. It starts off with 8, then goes down to 4, then goes down to 2, and we get a winner at the end of the night.
Holy smokes, that's high stakes.
Oh, yeah, tons of high stakes. They got $25 on the line.
Now, I assume people should bring their own prepared material. Is that correct, or can they be handed something? What are the expectations for the participants?
Yes to both of those. If you're in the open mic, you can do anything you want. As Connor mentioned, you can read someone else's work. You can sing a song. You can have musical accompaniment. When it comes to the competitive portion of the show, it's just you and your own words and a mic. No music, nothing else.
Connor, you mentioned there's a 3-minute limit, if I heard you right, on the open mic portion. Is that correct?
That is correct. And then for the competitive part, it's a 5-minute limit for each piece. And that's from the moment that you start making sounds at the mic. So if you want to preamble and be like, this poem's about the time that my mom caught me stealing cookies or whatever, that counts
tick-tock,
as part of your time.
Tick-tock.
Yeah, right.
So if they hit that 5-minute mark, is there a hook that comes out and cuts the –
it's huge. We made our own hook. It's really elaborate. Unfortunately, we don't have an actual hook. What happens is there's a point deduction. And so there's a 10-second grace period. And then after that, every 5 seconds, I believe, there's a point deduction. And so you can have a great poem and get a good score. But if you go way over time, you're probably not going to make it past the round.
So there is a judging process that occurs.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Who are the judges? Is that a rotating group of folks? How does someone achieve that stature?
I feel like it's really a perfect example of kind of how the community works in this example. Like, just in the same way anyone can show up and compete, you can show up and just be part of the experience by being a judge. Like, after the open mic, we go around and we find five judges. And, like, we ask people to do, and we get, like, a little bio of them. We introduce them to the audience and everything. And we just give them, like, these number cards, 1 to 10 with a 0.5 option. And then at the end of each piece, like, the MCs will come up and they'll be like, all right, judges. And then whoever happens to be the judges that day raises up their scores. The highest and lowest scores get dropped. So the three median scores then get added together and is the score for that performance.
So it sounds like the emphasis is really on kind of an everyday person experience in terms of people coming together without particular qualifications to experience an art form and then evaluating it based on their own response.
We have a huge range of people who come month to month. We've had 7-year-old kids. We've had 70-year-old established poets. We run the whole gamut. You know, we just encourage anyone who with any kind of interest in spoken word to come and participate. You'll find if you come to the event that it's a very warm, very receptive audience, very welcoming, very supportive. If you've never stepped in front of a mic before, that's okay. We're there to help. If you're a seasoned professional, we'd love to hear you too. So just bring your best work and you know, you'll be rewarded for it.
And if you're used to sort of the slam poetry circuit, if you've like watched it on YouTube or if you've gone or you've even competed and you're here in town, this is not part of the official circuit and it's a very different environment. In the official circuit, like, it's powerful and it's intense and it's also kind of cutthroat because it's about like beating the other person and getting to the next round and like going to like regionals and state and nationals and stuff like that, and that's a big community of its own. We have a phrase, it's not about the points, it's about the poetry. There's no big things on the line. Like, we come and we take that sort of slam structure of like rounds and we do it, but there's not a very competitive nature to our organization, to that's not what we're interested in the community. Everyone has in them some need to express themselves. And for the people who come to Wushkanadei, and if they're competing, they, in that moment, it's through poetry. Or they're just are there to absorb what other people have to express. We give a venue for people who might not otherwise in their lives have a way to express themselves through that medium. And that's what it's about. It's not about the competition. Like, there is an overall arc to it. There is a structure. If you win a slam, you will be invited to compete in the Grand Slam at the anniversary in October. But that's just another more of the same. It's about building community. It's about giving people an opportunity to explore and express themselves as a group.
The popularity of the spoken word art and of poetry slam certainly seems to have grown enormously in the last 10 years. As a former teacher of English, exposing youth to poetry is a very, I think, delicate and challenging opportunity with youth. There seems to have been a bias about poetry not being interesting, but it seems that the spoken word movement has certainly changed that in the last 10 years.
It can also appear really intimidating if you walk in off the street, and we're not about that. We want to make everybody comfortable, get people in the room. It's about empowering voice and empowering the community. You know, that's all we're really trying to do.
Do you have a limit on the number of performers at the events?
We do a sign-up at the beginning. It's first come, first serve, and it's the cutoff is 8. For the slam and for the open mic, it's also 8, though we've been known to bend that rule if there's a lot of people, especially if there's like new people who haven't performed before. But we stick to 8 for the competition because that gives us the form. Like, you start with 8, go down to 4, go down to 2. Okay. And then for the open mic, it's a little more flexible, but we do stick to 8.
And are there any guidelines for potential participants to think about? Is there a line that can be crossed that's not okay?
It's rare. It's really rare. We do try and provide a theme on a monthly basis. We do have a theme this month, and we encourage people to write to the theme. They don't have to.
And the theme is?
The theme this month is All the World's a Poem.
Yeah, in honor of our partnership with Perseverance.
Right. This is the first time we've ever had the opportunity to perform at Perseverance Theater on
Which
the main stage.
So exciting.
We're very excited.
It's going to be great.
So we talked with the folks from Perseverance. They actually approached us and wanted to partner at some point. This was a great month to do that. So they helped us build the theme. We did this together. It's very much a cooperative endeavor this month.
And
very
it's exciting. All the world's a poem?
All the world's a poem.
Yeah, yep. I mean, like, can you think of two more easily marriageable communities than theater and spoken word poetry? I mean, like, they're both, like, linguistically based, performance-based, and there's got to be overlap already, but then there's got to be a lot of people who, in both camps, who've got to be excited about the combination. We've, local actor, just incredible. Christina Apathy is going to be one of the hosts emceeing the event. So, like, you know, it's good. We're going to even have people, like, involved up on stage who are part of in both communities. So.
And what does Wushkanade mean?
Wushkanade means parallel paths.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if that is significant to this series, if you want to explain the meaning.
Well, I believe Ishmael Hope came up with the name.
Okay.
When we first started back in 2010, like Connor was saying, it was just the working title of the group was just a Juno Poetry Slam. We didn't know where it was going to go. Christy Erickson, who's the president of the organization, helped begin this. She saw a need for spoken word and opportunity in the community. There really wasn't a forum for people to come and do that in a real safe, comfortable environment. She created this. We started performing at the Canvas every month. Pretty soon we outgrew that venue. And so we decided to come up with a rotating venue, which is why we go all around town. First time again in Douglas. We're very excited. But we put it out to a vote. Everybody who was in the room that particular event, we had six or seven different names come up. We voted on it. Parallel trails seemed to be the most applicable to the situation. You know, we're all in the world together. We're all walking different paths, but we all do come together at various points. So this is what we're trying to do is bring people together, relate to shared experience, give people an opportunity to maybe talk about things that are a little bit different. So I don't know if that answers your question
or
not.
It does. Thank you.
We're like each person's on their own path, and they can like look over through the trees and they can see someone else on their path, like walking towards their own destination, going on their own journey. But you can connect with that person because you're on a journey too.
Well, thank you so much. We're talking with Bill Merck and with Connor Linderham about the Wushkanade Poetry Slam. It is always the third Friday of the month, and this month, Friday, June 19th, it will be at Perseverance Theater for the first time. Sign-ups are at 6 o'clock. There is an open mic at 6:30. Each of those is limited to 8 persons, and at 7 p.m. the competitive slam begins. It's pay as you can, and you don't have to feel like you need to be a winner, but to come and listen to the art of the spoken word. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for the opportunity. Really appreciate it.
The 4th of July is always a fun time in Juneau, but this year will be extra special with the arrival of the new old-time Chautauqua. Made up of 55 talented artists, musicians, and vaudeville performers, including the Flying Karamazov Brothers, the new old-time Chautauqua will infuse the festivities with several opportunities for fun, including a community potluck, a chalk drawing contest, an afternoon of workshops, and, of course, their vaudeville show on the 3rd. The full event schedule and vaudeville show tickets are at k2.org.
Well, tomorrow on a Juno afternoon, you'll be hearing from members of the Talk Who Wins about upcoming events. Seneca Harper will be here to highlight this weekend's Mod Carousel performance, and you'll hear about other art happenings in Juno. Cloudy with isolated showers through Friday, looking a little bit better for the weekend. Thanks for joining me, Lori Scandling, and Jeff Brown on a Juno afternoon.